This episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Bambi. HR manager salaries average $70,000 a year. Only Bambi gives you a dedicated HR manager for just $99 a month. Get your free HR compliance audit at bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled bambee.com/accidentalcreative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including the new book, The Motivation Code, available now wherever books are sold. If you want your work to stand out, it has to be different from the work of everyone around you. Now, that doesn't mean that there can't be similarities between what you're doing and what other people are doing, but your work has to stand on its own. There has to be something that separates it from the pack. One of my favorite authors and thinkers was a mystic and monk named Thomas Merton from the 20th century, and he once wrote, "There can be an intense egoism in following everyone else. People are in a hurry to magnify themselves by imitating what is popular and too lazy to think of anything better. Hurry ruins saints as well as artists. They want quick success, and they're in such a hurry to get it, they cannot take time to be true to themselves. And when the madness is upon them, they argue that their very haste is a species of integrity. They want quick success, and they're in such a hurry to get it, they cannot take time to be true to themselves." I think this really speaks to what we see a lot in the marketplace. People are in such a hurry to succeed quickly that they don't take the time to build something that is uniquely an expression of what they are capable of building. And so on today's show, we're going to talk with Mike Michalowicz. He's written several books. It's called Get Different. And he's going to talk to us about how we can market what we do in a way that allows us to stand out from the crowd and attract the attention of the people we are actually trying to serve with our work. Here's Mike. Well, it's so great to welcome back to the show Mike Michalowicz. He is the author of Fix This Next, Profit First, and a number of other fantastic books. His new book is called Get Different, Marketing That Can't Be Ignored. Mike, welcome back to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Todd, it is a joy to be back with you.
So it's funny, off mic before we started recording, I was just asking you, like, hey, how are things going and all of that? And we were sort of reflecting on our past year and all of the COVID dealings and everything else that's going on in everybody's world. This is a time when a lot of people have had to think differently about what they've been doing. I think this is a time when maybe some of the things that worked, just people took for granted, no longer work. And so your book feels like it's pretty well timed. You're challenging people to think differently about the way they market. Was that intended, or did you already have this book well in the pipeline before COVID hit?
Yeah, the book was well in the pipeline. I started actually working on it 7 years ago, but the timing is idyllic. I do think, the book really is about marketing and how we present ourselves. That being said, with this COVID pandemic, your business, my business, we were talking about what you're creating. You have to become a creator, introduce new things, which means it requires new marketing. So it is interesting how the timing's worked out to be a little bit fortuitous. I think the circumstances suck, but I hope the book is more applicable today than it was even pre-COVID.
Yeah, well, this is a perfect time to be having this conversation. Frankly, coming out of COVID, it's funny. I think a lot of things have been stripped away, and it's a good time for people to rethink how they approach their marketing, whether they run a marketing division for a large company, if they run a small business, if they're a freelancer. This is the time to be thinking about this. And so I want to dive into some of the concepts in the book, because this really, it made me think. Pun intended, I'm going to keep using the word different, and I know hard to avoid because it's in the title, but that's really what it made me do. It made me think differently about some of the things I'm doing. Everything in the book centers around this dad marketing framework, which could sound like, we're going to be marketing to dads. We're not. could you explain that framework for us?
Yeah. So as I was looking at marketing, I found that there's a common thread, if that's the right choice of words, in what distinguishes successful marketing from unsuccessful. And a lot of the unsuccessful marketing, shockingly, is businesses that try to replicate best practices of the industry. Now, it's ironic because best practices are of great service in so many facets. Like if you have a recruiting process that works and it's a best practice, I absolutely should use that too. If you have a efficiency process, I should use that. But marketing, when we start replicating our competition, when we do the same as our contemporaries, it actually becomes white noise. So what I found is these three elements that actually break out of the white noise. So the first part, the first D in the acronym, stands for different. You have to do something that's unexpected and inconsistent with what the established marketing norm is. I'm not saying you have to be outrageous. You don't have to be, you know, Bozo the Clown walking around with your waka waka horn, but you do need to do what's unexpected, because when something unexpected presents itself, our brain wiring forces us to evaluate it. We're evaluating if it's a threat or opportunity or maybe more ignorable stuff, but we have to know. So anytime something different presents itself, we evaluate it. But then it also has to be attractive. That's what the A stands for. Attractive means it speaks to me as a prospect, that this different thing is also engaging, that maybe it serves a need I have, or it invokes curiosity, or it's entertaining me. But there has to be a reason to stay engaged with it. And then the final D stands for direct. Direct means to give the prospect a specific action to take. Now, the caveat for this is it needs to be reasonable. If you were looking to buy a car and I'm like, hey, Todd, I sell cars. Give me $100,000 and we'll find your dream car. That's unreasonable. You would never do that. But if I say, hey, Todd, I sell cars. Why don't you give me your cell number? I'll text you pictures of our inventory and we can start honing down on what your dream car is. That may be reasonable. So your marketing must, to be effective, differentiate, meaning stand out, attract, meaning keep people engaged, and then direct to compel them to take an action, which ultimately gets them to the final transaction, whatever that may be.
So the way you put this in the book is do different to get noticed in a way that attracts your ideal prospects and directs them to act. And I love that. And I think that's a very simple way to summarize much of what's in the book, right? But obviously you go into a lot more detail. One of the concepts early in the book is something you call the Target 100, which I thought was a really interesting concept. Could you describe that to us?
Yeah, I had the chance to talk with statisticians, mathematicians, people that work in the field of probabilities. And what was really interesting was that to prove out a concept, we need to achieve a sample size. The ideal sample size, one that has the highest probability of accuracy with the lowest number of sampling, is actually 10%. So if I'm targeting 5,000 people in my domain that I could market to, 500 would be the ideal sample size to market to with a high level of probability that that will continue to be consistent for the entire group. But you can actually go down to 100, and they found that this is the lowest threshold to have at least a high probability of a certain result. So if I have 5,000 targets and I test out 100 of those targets through my marketing, whatever I get there is likely to continue to be true. Now there's much more variability, but it's the likely outcome. So if it works for 100, it's likely going to work for 5,000. If it works for 75% of 500, that's a 10% sample, it's likely to work out 75% the whole way. So the smaller sample, I can't nail the percentage, but I can nail that it's a probable likelihood or unprobable. And for marketing experiments, and that's, I suggest we do experiments instead of plans. There's a reason behind that vernacular. A plan means commitment. Experiment means testing. There's expectation for failure. There's a hope for success. There's inherently more experiments, modifications. That when we do an experiment, we need to experiment with a minimum sample of 100. Unless your entire domain is, say, is 500, then 10% of that's 50. You can go to a smaller sample. But the general rule is start off with a target 100 people you're going to market to prove out that your experiment works or doesn't.
Love that. And you know, it's, I think sometimes people, you know, sort of like lick their finger and stick it up and figure out which way the wind is blowing. And what you're describing feels like a much more effective way to conduct little experiments. Because as you said, you know, we're probably going to try many things before we discover what actually works, what actually gets us traction.
I'm shocked at myself for how many times I've said, oh, it looks like this is the behavior of the market. And I'm using a data set of one. A customer says, I read your book, Profit First, and I think it sucks. And I'm like, oh my God, everyone thinks it sucks. Or I read Profit First and it worked for me because I did did it with Citibank as the bank. Oh my God, Citibank is the bank. Like those right. data sets are really, really dangerous when you have a data set of one, because it's just showing an opinion of one person, but it absolutely does not represent the entire data set. I also realized that if I told myself, you know, well, I got to look at a sample of 1,000 or 10,000, it was so overwhelming, I wasn't likely to do it. So I wanted to cut down to the minimal data set where I said, okay, this is doable. And there was validity in the data, that there was statistical significance. And that's why I think the 100 is so important.
Yeah. Under the differentiate part of the framework as well, you talked about this concept, discover your est, which I also really, really enjoy. Could you tell us a little bit about that concept?
Yeah. So est is the superlative of something. So a person can be the fastest or the slowest, or someone could be the funniest, the weirdest, the loudest, the quietest. And what I found is that in any of these ests, that is where we become notices different. I think, you know, when you think of a swimmer in modern times for the Olympics, Michael Phelps is the winningest swimmer. So he's pretty recognized. The other folks, you know, people that came in second place, I don't know what their names are. And I suspect you don't either. And this is true in our marketing efforts, that whatever we do, we won't be distinguished and notable until we are the est in that marketing. Now, I encourage people to be authentic to their true selves. So I like to be silly. So in a lot of the work I do, I embrace the silliest marketing you'll see. When people visit my website, I bastardize and make fun of my own last name, which is so freaking hard to pronounce. I even have a site that says, if you hate this guy, click here, and it throws you to an anger management website. I like to joke around. So maybe it's the jokiest website too. The thing is, it is authentic to who I am. So when people explore that site, some people are going to be attracted to that and say, wow, finally found my people. Other people are going to look at that and say, this guy is a tool. I want nothing to do with him. So when you're the est, you will polarize a community. So you want to polarize them in the regards to be the people that love you are set up to love you in all regards. Yeah. When you experience my website, or you read my book, or you hear me live speaking, you're going to experience the same experience throughout. And that's the key. So when you employ this est technique, I guarantee it'll get you attention, but it needs to be true and authentic to yourself. Otherwise, there's going to be an incongruency. And if you appeal to someone with that est in the beginning, but that's not consistent with who you are, you're going to lose them in the end. So put out the true est version of yourself.
Which true est, I love that. Which is, you know, something a lot of people do, right? That's another pitfall that people fall into, is they are either chasing the market or they're trying to be what they think is wanted in the marketplace in some way, or make their product what they think is wanted versus what it is. And yeah. The result is you end up reaching no one in the end.
There's a concept that revolves around called pivoting. And I kind of rail against it. I understand the core concept, and it does make logical sense that if the community needs something in a certain way, adjust accordingly. Otherwise, it's not going to buy from you. So pivot, change what you do until it complies with the community's demand, and now you're going to sell. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. People pivot their business into something that they loathe. I may be selling something, but I don't care for it. I don't like it. And that's a real problem, because then the zhuzh, the energy behind that is lost. Instead of pivoting, we need to align. What I mean by this is, absolutely, you must speak to customer interest and demand. Otherwise, you have no revenue. But you also must speak to your interest and demand, because that's where energy is generated. That's where the best of you is presented. So in our marketing, you can set this up right from the get-go. Speak in the way that's truly authentic to you, and speak to a community. If the community's not responding to it, sure enough, you need to adjust and change your marketing. But again, ask yourself every time you put marketing out there or anything out there, is it true to you? Is this something you thirst to do? Does it speak to your heart? And once it comes into alignment, then you become unstoppable. It is truthfully who you are, so you enjoy doing it, and the consumers want it, so it generates revenue, and it continues this upward spiral.
Yeah, I love that. All right, I want to talk a little bit about timing, because this is a topic that comes up often when I'm either talking to people who market or people who create products. In fact, I had a conversation with Phil Libin, co-founder and former CEO of Evernote, and was asking him how he decides which product to work on. And he said, we tend to focus on products that are just possible for the first time in human history, right? Like technology has just made it possible. So it's still hard, but it's doable, but nobody's really doing it because it's kind of hard to do, right? This kind of speaks to this timing piece of the framework. How do you think about timing when it comes to marketing, how you communicate with the people you're trying to connect with?
Yeah. So, well, timing's everything, right? There's a comedic joke where I've even seen on TV where the comedian says to someone else, ask me what I attribute my comedic talent to. And the person starts asking and the comedian interrupts them and says, timing. So they give the answer. Yes. Timing. And so when it comes to marketing, you have to, you want to meet up with a need in the community. So one mistake I see is people go to the final offer too soon. You're in the market for a car, for me to come to you, and you're not buying it today, you're just kind of thinking about it. And I come to you and say, hey, buy the car today. I could actually overwhelm you with too much of a demand and lose the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I need to gauge where the customer is. So we do this incremental, I call them directs, it's part of the DAD framework, but incremental matriculation, a big word there, but to move someone toward the ultimate transaction at the pace that matches them. So you may just be in the market considering, you know what, I'm going to need a car in the next year. My current car is getting kind of beat up. If I cross paths with you through my marketing, what can I do to capture that? So maybe I could offer you, here's the 10 things to consider as you look at new cars in the future. And in exchange, I'd love to get your email to stay in front of you. Now I have your permission to stay in front of you, and I've given you something of value for this moment, even though the ultimate transaction of buying the car is not what you seek to do right now. Then the responsibility is on me to stay in front of you in a reasonable fashion, not to overwhelm you, but to stay in front of you and say, hey, as you're evaluating cars, here's the new cars that are coming out this year, and maybe a new car is a better choice because here's what's going on when you consider that. There's this rise of the electric cars, but my experience is don't buy the first version of the electric car, buy version 2. It's a far superior car. But to keep you in contact with you, and then when you kind of raise your hand and say, hey, I'm looking to buy a car, that's when I go for the close.
Hey everyone, we're going to get back to our conversation with Mike Michalowicz in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Bambi. So when running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap. They're an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month-to-month, no hidden fees, cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/accidentalcreative right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled B-A-M to the B-E-E.com/accidentalcreative. This episode is also sponsored by Novo. So small business owners, startups, freelancers, entrepreneurs, do you know the number one way to avoid unfair bank fees? Step one, close your account. Step two, open a new Novo free business banking account. Novo is the number one business banking app because it's built from the ground up to be powerfully simple and free business banking that Money Magazine called the best business checking account of 2021. With Novo, there are no minimum balances, no transaction limits, and no hidden fees. Sign up for free in under 10 minutes at banknovo.com/accidentalcreative. Then they'll mail you a Novo debit card and you get free ATM use. Novo makes banking easy and secure. You can manage your account in Novo's customizable web, Android, and iOS apps with built-in profit-first accounting and invoicing. Plus, you can tag each transaction and upload receipts. Novo seamlessly integrates with most leading business tools and services like Stripe, Shopify, QuickBooks, and more for free. Plus, Novo offers over $5,000 in perks and discounts just for signing up. Get your free business banking account in just 10 minutes at banknovo.com/accidentalcreative. Go to banknovo.com/accidentalcreative to sign up for free right now and get a free copy of Novo's Small Business Starter Guide, banknovo.com/accidentalcreative. And now back to our conversation with Mike Michalowicz. Yeah, that's, I love that you make that point, because I think sometimes we fail to recognize that people often really want to either buy our product or interact with us, or in some capacity, you know, leverage our services or whatever it is. They really want to. It's just, it's not the right time for whatever reason, you know? And we tend to take that as rejection. Well, the problem is my product, or the problem is my service. Right. And sometimes it's just, no, they really want to. It's just a terrible time right now to do that.
Right. No, no's really a not now. I think we're jaded because of what we see of mainstream marketing. We, as business owners and marketers ourselves, are marketed to a million times more than we market out. Mm-hmm. And the marketing we see most commonly is the most common marketing, which is usually big budget marketing. So you see the Budweiser commercial for the 100th time during the Super Bowl, Clydesdales clopping around, snow coming down, you know, sleepy town. And we're like, oh, that's what good marketing is. And the answer is not for small business. Right. That's interesting brand awareness. And Budweiser backs it with $100 million or $200 million every year, that, you know, one commercial. And what they're trying to do is simply own brain space. So when you happen to be in a store and you happen to be buying beer, that they own enough brain space that they slant you toward it. But we as small business owners don't have that luxury. We don't have a $100 million budget. We're lucky if we have a $100 budget. Right. So our job is, can we get the permission of the customer to stay engaged with them, meaning deliver value to them and have an exchange. Give me your email or some way to contact you, your seller, so something like that. Then when the customer, we have to give the customer an opportunity to raise their hand. So you stay in front of them frequently enough through email communication, other kind of reach outs. And when they're ready to buy, there's got to be a clear call to action. One of the problems I see, and I can see this in websites all the time, is when it comes to call to action time, it's actually very confusing. Like, you'll go to a website and one of the most common buttons I see says learn more. And it's kind of crazy, because the whole reason I went to a website was to learn more. Like, you know, then now I'm in this kind of circle. So what we need to do is make it really succinct, apparent, and clear and safe for the customer to make that buying decision when they're ready, which the button may say, buy the t-shirt you want, you know, or get put your deposit down for our consultative work or our construction project or whatever it is, but be explicitly clear on what the customer must do next to engage ultimately your services or buy your product.
Right. Right. Well, and that I think so many people get cold feet. You know, they get right up to the precipice, but they don't make the ask. They don't direct people to what they want to do. Why are we so afraid to just ask people to do the thing that we want them to do?
Because we have it framed wrong. You know, we see ourselves as being bothersome. Like, I don't want someone to buy something they don't need. I don't want them to feel manipulating them. But here's the question I ask entrepreneurs. In fact, I just did an event earlier today with dance studio owners. And said, I want to ask you a question. There was a couple hundred people on this live webinar. I said, your offering, is it better than your competition in some or maybe multiple ways? Do you care more for your clients? Do you respond faster? Do you have a better dance studio? Are you more innovative? Something like that. Everyone said yes. And I told them, it is likely true that you are better. Because typically, people that are looking to improve their businesses don't seek out education and improvement. They don't listen to the Accidental Creative podcast. They just do. But the better businesses are often learning. So I said, okay, let's go with this assumption. You're better than the competition. If that's true, you have a damned responsibility to market and ask for the sale. Because if the customer is looking to buy, they're going to buy. They're not going to buy from you because you're unnoticeable. You have to stand up and wave your hand. It's the ultimate act of kindness. And I think when people understand that framing, that marketing is kindness, asking for the sale is kindness because you're better, then you have a responsibility to do it. And hopefully that will overcome this icky feeling of being bothersome, because it really isn't.
Yeah, yeah. So I know a lot of people listening might feel a little overwhelmed Maybe they're already, they've tried everything. You know, I think most small, especially small business owners, like they've probably tried everything at some point, or they've half tried everything, right? And maybe they feel like, okay, I've already got something going and it's not working, but you know, I've got all these things going, right? All these plates spinning. Where do I even begin to make changes with my marketing in that I've already got so many different plates spinning? What would be your advice to someone who feels a little bit overwhelmed right now?
Yeah. So first of all, it's normal. And what I found is when I was saying I've done everything and I really evaluated it, I did the five most common things that all my competition did. I was buried in the best practice of the industry while there's, you know, millions of potential new ideas. So I was kind of circulating in a small red ocean, to take a concept from that book, Blue Ocean. So first of all, to really quantify what you haven't tried. The second thing is then just to acknowledge the humanity of ourselves, that it is scary to do something different and new because we don't know how people are going to respond. There's a fear of being rejected. So to get started, what I tell people is once you frame and understand that marketing equals kindness, start going out and just do random acts of kindness, not even marketing your business. Go out and just, you know, pick up garbage in your neighborhood, not with this, you know, seeking out to get noticed, but see how you feel. Fill the meter for someone else's parking spot. Just say a nice compliment to someone you pass on the street or something like that, and just see how you feel. When you put kindness out there, you feel great. And once you start building that muscle of putting out kindness and appreciate and realize that marketing, a good business, your business, is kind, then you're going to be excited to do it because of how it makes you feel. We have to make that transition, and it starts with the action of just being kind.
That's so helpful because, and I, by the way, I think also a lot of people may think, well, that's easy for Mike to say, or that's easy for Todd to say, or that's easy for someone else to say, because, you know, they've done all these things and they're in front of people and they impact people and they do, you know, and the reality is, Mike, I feel that way. I feel like I'm being a burden. I don't sure. want to make the ask. I don't want to, you know, well, you know, this is not just, you know, this is everyone. Every single person feels this way. To some degree, every single person feels like they're a burden when they make an ask of someone else.
Yeah. It's no question. Listen, I'm launching a book and as we're recording this, like literally it's launching today, and there's people that I've reached out to saying, hey, I want to get exposure. But as I'm asking or not asking, it's because there's this fear. I'm like, I really shouldn't, and I don't want to impede. Yeah. And so I struggle with that too, but I look at it and saying, if I don't ask, the answer is no. If I do ask, if I give them the reasonable and comfortable way of saying no without harming a relationship, then it's really, I have an obligation to ask because it's kind. So
yes.
When I reach out to people, I say, listen, like for example, I'd love to be on the Accidental Creative Podcast. And here's my selfish reason for asking. This will enhance exposure for my book and your community is perfect for me. So I realize it's selfish. I think my content may contribute to what you're looking to do, but it may not. So please tell me to F off or say no. And I won't feel anything negative about it. I just wanted to put it out there because of how it serves me.
Right.
The funny thing is when we put out our honest, selfish motivation, because any transaction is for it to be a win-win, there has to be a win-win. Mm-hmm. If I simply said, hey, you know, if you get me on the Accidental Creative, you're gonna get more audience members, you're gonna love the stuff I deliver. I'm of service to you. Now I'm actually putting this burden on you and I'm being exploitive. So when I ask in my marketing, I give the other side a way out, but I also tell myself it's motivation and actually quote unquote converts more. Mm-hmm. When we market, don't say, listen, I'm trying to sell you a car because you need a car. Saying, I want to sell you a car that matches your needs because I want to make a commission on selling this car. And if I thrill you, I want you to buy the rest of your cars for the rest of your life from me. So this can be a win-win. And you put it out there like that, it's a much more comfortable exchange and people can be much more honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Because people know that anyway. They know that you
know it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you're not fooling anyone, you know, that you're being completely, you know, just virtuous in trying to sell them a car. They know that you're going to make some money. And that's fine. I always tell people when I go into a transaction, listen, I want you to make money and I want you to help me spend the least amount of money I need to spend. Right. Yeah. And so if we both do that, then we both win. And I want you to make money because this is your job. It's what you do. Right. But let's figure out how we can make this mutually beneficial. And it's a so much cleaner transaction when that's the approach.
Such a cleaner transaction. You know, it's funny. Just talking about cars. I actually recently bought a car and, the car salesman, when we were talking, he says, you were talking about his businesses. He goes, hey, between me and you, you know, the commission I get is really not based upon percentage, it's based upon the car transaction. So he goes, but there are certain thresholds where it affects me. So as you buy this car, if we reduce the price a little bit, that's actually okay. For me. And just by that, I said, you know what, let's get you a little win here. And we actually started negotiating a win. Now, of course, he could be making up this whole story, but the disclosure felt extremely integral. I felt very comfortable with him. He's the first car salesman ever after I bought the car and they cleaned up and stuff. I came back the next day to pick it up. I brought a bottle of wine and said, this is a joy having this experience with you. People are going to buy cars. Why not be the person that makes it joyful? People are going to buy your service. Why not be the marketer who makes it joyful?
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Well, Mike, just so you know, you always have an open invitation to come back on the show because you are so generous with your time and your insights. And your books are fantastic. And listen, I know we have a lot of people listening to this show who are freelancers or who are small business owners, or they work for a small business, or they work in marketing. And I just got to say, your books should be on the top shelf of any library of anybody who has to market, unquestionably. If people want to know more about you and your work and this book, Get Different, where can they go?
The place to go is gogetdifferent.com. And I have details on the book. I have free resources. One of my favorite ones there is about 100 different ways to market your business at no cost or very low cost, so you can start experimenting. That's all at gogetdifferent.com.
Fantastic. Well, Mike Michalowicz, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Todd, thank you, my brother.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. The Accidental Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com for more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.